One budget hearing of April 20th in this virtual Zoom webinar meeting. Before I begin with the agenda, I'd like to recognize the members of council that have joined us in this Zoom webinar. I recognize Councilman Smiley, Councilman Sheldon, Councilman Carter, Councilwoman Kilpatrick, Councilman Street, Councilman Durham, Councilman Woods, Council President Karen Hartley-Nagel is here. Councilman Tackett is here. I believe I heard Councilwoman Diller, you're here?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. With that, I think I've recognized everybody. I'd like to move on to the agenda, and we want to have a motion to approve the budget hearing minutes of the 6th of April.
Motion to approve is provided.
Second.
To approve the 6th of April budget hearing minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Councilman Smiley, I'd like to make a motion to go out of order due to time constraints on a public safety meeting outside the county that has been scheduled. So I'd like to make a motion to go out of order that we do public safety, auditor, ethics, and then land use.
I have a motion to change the order of the hearing.
I have a second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? All right, we're going to change the order. We're going to have, due to conflicts with other meetings, we're going to have public safety lead off in the hearing. Who is here to present for public safety?
Good afternoon. This is Carla Jones. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I will be facilitating the presentation of public safety. The way that we would like to move along, we're going to go in order of the book, and each chief will address their accomplishments and goals. And then I will address all of the position information and the budget information. And then chiefs will take back over and they will go over their performance metrics where applicable. So without further ado, we can go ahead and get started. Starting on page one is the department's organization chart. I know that you guys have already had the book for a few weeks, so I'm very familiar with the book. Our organizational chart shows that we have 685 total positions in the department, and you can see all of the divisions within the department broken down with all of the the functions that each division performs. Moving along to page two, you will see our diversity summary. I just want to note that this information was provided to us by the Human Resources Department. This summary shows the entire department. There's a comparison between calendar year 2019 and calendar year 2018. The summary is broken out by job category and also by male and female, and also by white and non-white. If you do have any specific questions about diversity, I would suggest that when the chiefs speak to their divisions, that you ask them any diversity questions that you might have at that time.
We could. I'd just like to pause. I'd like to recognize that Public Safety Chairman Councilman Bill is here. Bill Bell.
Okay. If I could direct you to page three, I will now go over the Division of Administration. I am the financial officer for that division. And as you know, that division consists of the fiscal office and also the office of the director. In fiscal year 20, some of the major accomplishments that we achieved within the division, the first being in the grants area, we partnered with various agencies, and we both state and local and federal, and we were awarded various grant funding for some of the programs within the department. Additionally, there were many technology upgrades that occurred in the public safety building during fiscal year 20, including the ability to have conference meetings remotely, such as how we're doing now. Bigger television screens have been provided in many of the conference rooms as well. And also I wanted to mention, we have improved our grant application process tremendously. We collaborate with the Office of Finance on a regular basis to make sure that they're up to date on any grant opportunities that we are pursuing. And we also make sure that we're filling out the forms that are required of the Office of Finance. Next year, in fiscal year 21, some of our goals are to improve our communication among departments and over within the entire county. We communicate a lot with various departments, and we want to make sure that we're communicating so that we're providing a better product to all departments. We also want to start documenting and publishing our standard operating procedures for the fiscal office, which we currently do not do. And lastly, we're going to take a look at all of the positions within the Division of Administration to make sure that all the employees are actually, that the job specifications match the work duties that the employees are actually performing.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to let the record reflect that Councilman Hollins has joined us.
Thank you.
Okay. Moving along to page 6, that is our position history. We currently have 8 positions in the Division of Administration. That number has been consistent over the years since fiscal year 2017. Page 7, you'll see that we do not have any position changes for fiscal year 21. On page 8, you will see our vacancy.
Point of clarification, Ms. Jones. You're using pages 3, 4, 6, 7. We need to go by the budget book, if you would be so kind, which puts you at page 19. You might be on 6 or 7 of the police, but our budget book is in whole. So if you have one of those handy, if possible, if not, we'll follow from there. But right now we're on 19 for police position changes.
Okay, I'm actually using the presentation. Do you all not have a copy of the presentation?
I don't know who made your presentation, but we go by the budget books that are provided to us in advance.
Councilman Smiley, just for my book, she's discussing the administration, which is the first 7 or 8 pages of the book.
Oh, my apologies, and I thought she was under the police. My apologies.
No problem. I'll give you a second to get caught up.
No, I'm there.
Okay, thank you. So next, I think I did talk about our positions. We have one vacancy on page 8, and that's the Director of Public Safety. That position has been vacant since 2017. Moving along to the budget on page 10, you will see a very nice graphic of our budget over the years, as far back as fiscal year 16 and up to the fiscal year 21 recommended budget. The recommended budget for fiscal year 21 is actually down 1.33% compared to this current fiscal year. On page 11, you will see all of the budget changes, the recommended budget changes from fiscal year 20 to 21. And at the very bottom, you'll see that there is a 1.33 decrease in the budget, and that amounts to about $19,000. And basically, that decrease is primarily because we are taking the utility budget that has been budgeted in administration for the police substations. We're taking that out of our budget and moving it to the police budget where we think it's most more appropriate. Just over the years, we've been paying all of the utilities for the public safety building and the police substations out of the Division of Administration's budget. That's the major decrease in our budget next year. And then there are quite a few increases in related to salaries and benefits. The Director of Public Safety salary had been budgeted at a step one in fiscal year 21. We would like to budget that at a step six. And I'm sure that you all are aware that there is a new copier lease effective January 2020. And so that you will see an adjustment there for the copier lease. And we did have a small adjustment for cross charges for next year. On page 12, you will notice that this page shows the budget summary for the division.
Councilman Bell, you had a question.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Do you want to hold questions till the end? I'm sorry I wasn't there in the very beginning. Or can I ask a question now?
Go right ahead and ask your question.
All right, thank you,
Mr. Chairman. We'll hold the rest till the end of the hearing.
All right, thank you, sir. Just looking at the Director of Public Safety and considering the fact it's been vacant since 2017, what is the rationale of starting out as a budget at a step six?
I may let someone else speak to this, but my understanding is that the goal is to eventually fill the position, and that whoever does fill the position probably would have the experience to start at a higher step than step one. That's my assumption. But if the Office of Finance is on the call on this conference, please feel free to chime in.
Councilwoman Kilpatrick, and then we want to hold our questions till the end. Go ahead.
Okay. Can I just ask, Mr. Bell, do you think that's too much or too little? Because as I looked at this, I thought for that position, they certainly don't make a lot of money.
No, and I guess I was just basing it on trying to get an answer as to why pay grade six, why step six. And, I believe it's been answered, and I'm fine with that.
And just so you know, we were provided that number by the Office of Finance. That is not a number that the department came up with.
I just didn't know whether there was any rationale in looking at someone and trying to, like you said, with the experience and everything. So that's it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Let's proceed.
Did I hear another question? I'm sorry.
We're gonna hold questions till the end. Let's just proceed.
Okay, no problem. On page 14, this page shows our contractual services budget, specifically what we budget for professional services and service contracts. So you can see we have two different OCAs in the Division of Administration, 070301. And then we have 070102. 070102 is where we pay a lot of the building costs, the utilities. In reference to contractual services for the 070102, we pay for the maintenance. We provide, there is a budget for the audio and visual systems in the building. So we pay for that out of the service contract budget. And also we have a subsidy that we pay for the vendor that provides food in the public safety building. That subsidy is $20,000 a month. You will also see some other items listed, but the subsidy and the money for the audiovisual system makes up the majority of that money. If anyone has any questions.
Mr. Smiley.
Yes. Did I hear you correctly? That subsidy is $24,000 a month?
A year. I apologize if I said monthly. It's for the year. We pay.
That makes it a little bit more palatable. Is there a gross cost and revenue available? Although that's a private entity, do we have a gross, what it costs them to operate that and what revenue they bring in?
So I know that I know that the vendor does provide that information to the Department of Administration pretty regularly. I have not seen it, but I do know as a requirement for him to receive that subsidy that he does have to provide that information.
I'd be interested in having the gross cost and revenue for the last fiscal year, if someone can get that for me.
I'll make sure that we get that to you right away.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. If you don't have any more questions on the Division of Administration, we can move right into the Police Division.
Now you're caught up.
Let's proceed with that, please.
Okay. So then Colonel Bond is going to go ahead and address the accomplishments and goals first.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to start off with the accomplishments.
Colonel Bond, just please identify yourself for the record.
Sorry. Colonel Vaughn Bond, Chief of Police, Newcastle County. We'll start off with the accomplishments for the year 2020. We have listed just a few out of several that we've had during the course of the year. Starting off with our behavioral health unit, we would like to acknowledge that we were able to receive additional grant funding to help us stand up our behavioral health unit. As many of you know, this unit is fairly new. We were the first in the state of Delaware to have a unit such as this after recognizing the many issues and many calls for service that we dealt with that had an underlying issue of mental health. As a result, we put together a team that included an intern from one of the local universities, and we actually put the wheels in motion to get this program going and off the ground. This was a tremendous sacrifice for the police department, but it was one that we thought was necessary in order for us to meet the needs of the individuals that we were dealing with on a regular basis. And the sacrifice came in terms of us assigning a captain to the program, a lieutenant to the program. Many of you know Colleen Kearns and George, Omari George, are also, and Alex Schofield, who's our civilian, who are assigned to this unit. And I can say that thus far, we have seen a tremendous appreciation from the community. Over the last couple weeks alone, I received two complimentary letters, one from a retired DSP officer talking about their engagement they had with a family member of his, as well as other individuals who wanted to just show their appreciation for what we've done with that unit. That unit is continuing to grow under the leadership of Captain John Treadwell, and I think that it's going to be something that is going to continue to give us that impact to change the lives of those we serve. The other accomplishment, and I know we list it quite often, but I think it's important that we keep it in the forefront, is that of our TAPS program. As you know, and you had opportunity to see some of the numbers in there, while there has been some slight increases in some categories, that TAPS program is an accomplishment, listed again as an accomplishment, because in our line of work in policing, there are many programs that are started, but they often fall by the wayside. And we understand the importance of our TAPS program. It has given us focus and direction as an agency to go out here to know exactly what we need to do, how to deal with it, so that we can improve the quality of life for those that we serve. So to see the stats, as we'll talk about a little bit later on, I think a lot of that is attributed to the fact that we do have this TAPS program. The third accomplishment was the graduation, and this is, again, thanks to the support of the county executive, who I will say that since he has been in office and I've been chief of police, we've managed to have at least one police academy for each of these years. And so the 45th Police Academy, we graduated 21. In your book, it talks about the 46th Police Academy, which we just celebrated their graduation a few weeks ago, where we graduated 13. And we're currently in the process of actually hiring for the 47th Police Academy as well. As a result of these back-to-back academies, we have mitigated a lot of the issues that we've had in terms of staffing from the retirements and those officers who elect to leave us to go to other police departments. The fourth accomplishment I would like to talk about is the maintaining and development of our strong relationships in the community. As everyone here is aware of, our police department, our backbone is community policing. And while we celebrate significant arrests and criminal investigations, I think it's important that we give that same attention, that same focus to our ability to improve our relationship in the community. And so we have done things such as the community response team, which is another word for our foot patrol units that we have placed in various communities throughout New Castle County to help foster and build relationships in those communities, our Citizens Police Academy, the Halloween Trunk or Treat Program, our Coke Drive, our Backpack Drive, the Ice Cream Truck, Mobile Power Play Zone, and then our overall personal interaction with those that we serve. The last accomplishment would be technology and transparency. I believe that you will be hard pressed to find another police department that has as many technical equipment and apparatus to help us further our delivery of service to the community. This is something that's ongoing, and we recognize that it is costly because each time we get a new piece of equipment, the next year we're being told that there's an update to that, and these things cost money. But in order for us to continue to provide the service that we're providing, we can't shortcut it, and we have to make those sacrifices in order to provide the best service we can to the citizens of Newcastle County. In terms of goals, excuse me. Our goals going into 2021 are, and these are just a few, we have more, but we want to continue to develop staff and develop our behavioral health unit. As you know, we were awarded a substantial grant, several grants, and we are now working in concert with Christiana Care with the mindset of hiring, Christiana Care hiring additional civilians who will then be part of our behavioral health unit. And help us to forward that unit so that we can continue our service to the public. Recruitment and retention continues to be a challenge, not only for Newcastle County Police Department, but for departments across this country. And the most recent issue of the Police Chiefs magazine on the front page, on the front cover of the magazine, it talks about recruitment and retention. This is an issue that we're dealing with and where we're competing. Our applicant pools across this country have dwindled. There's not a lot of people who I think are interested at this particular time in joining law enforcement. And so it's become quite competitive for us. And so as we're seeing here in Newcastle County, that there are some police departments that are advertising for pre-certified or pre-trained officers. And as a result, you can see some of our officers have left us to go to other agencies. And consequently, we have selected some officers from other police departments here within the state as well. So that continues to be an issue for us. We are also focusing in on officer wellness. That has to be at the forefront of us taking care of our officers. Last year, 2019, you had 228 officers across this country, and I still think this number is underreported, that committed suicide. Law enforcement profession is a great profession, but it is one that is filled with a lot of stress and brings about a lot of issues. And if we are not on the forefront of creating a wellness program for our officers, then we're basically not serving them the same way that we expect them to serve others. And so the Officer Wellness Program has kicked off for us. We have a newsletter that goes out monthly where we talk about giving advice, whether it be on exercising, dieting, financial issues. And up until COVID-19, we were able to utilize one of our officers who's a certified trainer to train officers in exercising and providing them with information. My personal opinion is that the better a person feels, the better they will serve. The next one is community policing. Again, our community policing is at the core. The focus has to be for us to exceed the expectations of a police officer. So anytime when an officer goes out, That's an opportunity for us to do community policing. That interaction, we want officers to take it a step further. We want officers to do things that a person would not expect from them. We want officers to do things such as what Tracy Duffy did when she arranged for the homegoing services for a 94-year-old Korean War vet who passed away that didn't have family here. And she went to social media, contacted the local funeral home, had the services provided for free, went to social media, word spread, and they had several hundred people who showed up at the Veterans Cemetery to pay their respects. You're talking about, as many of you saw, Cliff Allen, who encountered a child who was being abused. And Cliff sacrificed his hair so that this child could get a haircut. And since then, this child has been placed in foster care. Cliff has remained in contact with him, and that child is doing great. The feedback that we're getting back from the community is that shock and surprise. But these are the things that we have to do as a police department to exceed the expectations. It's not just about, as I say, cops and robbers. This is about community policing, forming partnerships with the community so that we can address the issues that they're seeing in the community. And again, the last goal that we have is continuing to stay up to date with our technology and the equipment that we have. Again, as I mentioned earlier, it's expensive. And there's a lot of things out there, but we have a Captain Trish Davies, who's overseeing that right now, along with members of the police department and our tech crimes unit, to ensure that if there is something out there that can better our level of service, that we are going to go after it. And that will conclude the accomplishments and goals for the Division of Police.
Thank you, Colonel Bond. It was a very impressive presentation of your accomplishments and goals. So we're moving on to present positions and all that.
Okay, thank you. So I'll take back over. Moving along to page 18, you will see the position history for the police. The authorized count for the division is 434 positions. There are no position changes recommended for fiscal year 21. On page 20, you will see the list of vacancies for the division. Please note that this was as of March 9th. There have been some changes since then, including a crime analyst vacancy, and the total of police vacancies as of April 6th is actually 9. So for the Division of Police, their total vacancies are 12. On page 22, you will see the budget and the comparison of budget to actuals for the division. For next fiscal year 21, the police budget is recommended. The recommended budget would be $71.2 million. On page 23, I will go through some of the adjustments that represent an increase of 4.67% over fiscal year 20 to 21. The large majority of that increase is related to merit increases and non-competitive promotions for the police, as well as funding for the FOP contract that is expected to be signed. The FOP and the police executive staff contracts. The benefit rate for next year will be 59.092%. And some of the other adjustments are $175,000 for cell phones. So currently the Division of Administration pays for the cell phones for the Division of Police. Starting in fiscal year 21, the police budget will be paying for that directly, and the budget associated with that will be $175,000. That money is being transferred from administrative services. I mentioned earlier the $76,000 for the utilities for the police substations. Again, that money is coming from the Division of Administration. The body camera program, up until recently, that program had been paid out of the capital budget. It was a 5-year contract. starting in fiscal year 21. That cost is going to be moved to the operating budget, and the cost, the annual costs will be $643,000. Over 5 years, that would equate to $3.2 million. So you will notice that there's $240,000 that is that you see here budgeted for that program. That money came from the capital budget. That was what was left over from the project. We were actually about to pay for the fifth year this coming July, but since we renegotiated a new contract, that money, the $240,000 that was left in the capital budget, it's now going to move to the operating budget, and it's going to count towards our first payment for this new contract, which starts in July. I did mention that the annual cost is $643,000 annually. So if you move down the page a little bit below the gray, the shaded line, you'll see $237,000. That's also going to help pay for this body camera program. That is actually new money that's being budgeted for this program. And then the remaining funding that is needed to pay the full annual cost came from existing funds within the police budget. For instance, we moved $100,000 from our supply and material line for uniforms to help pay for the body camera program. And also, we're going to be including the tasers under this program in fiscal year 21. So it will include the body cameras and also tasers. We already had $65,000 budgeted in our equipment budget for tasers under a separate contract. So that now we're going to move that $65,000 over so that it's one contract for both the body cameras and also the tasers. So the total cost will be $643,000 annually for 5 years. Okay. If you go back up, you'll see that there is an adjustment of $31,000 for dog control services. And there was an increase in that contract with the state this fiscal year, last July, that was not budgeted because we were unaware of that increase. So in fiscal year 21, we're asking that the full amount of that increase be included in public safety's budget. Some of the other adjustments that you'll see are very consistent with other departments, such as the new copier lease, and then, of course, the cross-charge adjustments for next year. I mentioned the body cameras. So you will notice that there are $16,000 being requested for a Cellebrite contract. That is, Cellebrite is a vendor that we use to unlock cell phones for investigations. So that $16,000 we are requesting for that purpose, specifically for Android type phones. We already do have funding for non-Android phones, which I guess that would be Apple phones. But this $16,000, we don't have money to unlock the Android phones. So that $16,000 represents the Android phones. $14,000 for smart device iPod replacement. This is related to the body camera program. I believe that all officers also have an iPod that they use to help them with the body camera program. So this $14,000 would allow us to replace iPods that they currently have. $10,000 for software upgrades for the tech crimes unit. This unit uses software very heavily for investigations. They are requesting an additional $10,000 for next year. And lastly, $2,500 for facial recognition software that the police use for investigations.
Councilman Cartier?
Yes.
Colonel Bond has his hand up.
Okay. Colonel Bond, please.
Yes, I just want to say this. I know that when you're looking at these numbers, especially with the body-worn cameras. They are expensive. They have become an integral part of what we do. But I wanted to say that this cost of the $643,000 actually would have been closer to $800,000 had it not been for the work of Major Feaser in reaching out to our vendor and orchestrating a deal with them to lower the cost of that, basically saving us roughly $150,000 per year on this contract. So I just wanted to point that out.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Councilman Smiley, you're muted. All right. Proceed, please.
Keep going. Okay. On page 26, you will see the contractual services detail for both professional services and service contracts. I just want to point out that we have the police, a lot of their, they spend a lot of money in these two areas. For instance, the local data DNA database, which I'm sure you all are familiar with, that's paid out of the professional services line. And you can see all the other expenditures that we have out of that budget line for professional services. And also service contracts below, you can see some of the items that we purchase or pay for out of that budget line item, including the cell phone unlock for investigations that I mentioned earlier. On page 27, this basically shows funding that we received from the Criminal Justice Council for two positions that are included in our authorized strength. They're victim advocates, and they are entirely grant funded. So we did want you to see that in addition to our operating budget, we do have funding that supports two of our positions. Does anyone have any other questions on the budget? Okay. If there are no...
Yes, Councilman Bell.
Hey, thank you, okay. Mr. Chairman. This question would be for Colonel Bond, if he's still available.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. We were asked if we have any other questions. I get, Colonel, the question I have, our lieutenant colonel's position, and you know more than anyone, has been vacant since December, I believe, 18th. From my perspective, I think that to not fill that position is not the best thing. And I know that, you know, you're the professional, you're the colonel, and I respect your opinion. So I kind of like to hear your view as to why it hasn't, or is there a plan to fill it?
Well, I agree with you. I think that any position we have, let me go back, Vaughn Bond, Chief of Police. I believe that any position we have, they all play critical roles in our ability to provide a level of service. There has been some discussion between myself and others about our ability to fill this position. I'll be honest with you, we have not had that conversation as of late. There's been a lot of things that were going on, but at some point in the very near future, my plan is to bring it back up to talk about the possibility of us filling that position.
Okay, and I guess I would follow it up from my perspective as a co-chair of Public Safety Committee. And, you know, I think all of us are very familiar with our public safety department and the tremendous job that you and everyone in public safety do. But the police department, without a lieutenant colonel, the position open for a year and a half, I think the $151,000 that's being proposed for a public safety director, in the budget at least, would be better spent for the position of deputy chief, the lieutenant colonel, at $151,000. And, you know, my concerns are that when you look at our officers and you look at our senior officers and senior management in the police department, upward mobility, being able to attain certain promotional status, and especially when they get in their later years of service, is not only critical to their pension, but I believe that when you take a look at their knowledge base and how they got to the position where they're at today, lends itself to have a better qualified person to fill the lieutenant colonel's position. And I just think that from a promotional standpoint, and not without saying that, you know, you're very kind and presenting that, you know, you've been able to handle it with current staff and you know, different responsibilities are delegated. But you have a big job, and I think we all recognize it. And your plate is fuller than anyone's, especially in today's times. And I don't think anyone should kid themselves that having a second in command, a lieutenant colonel in a police department the size of ours, to support you and the staff management of our department is critical. So I'm just voicing my concern. I strongly feel that the lieutenant colonel's position should be filled.
Thank you, sir.
Councilman Carr.
This is also for Colonel Vaughn. A while ago we had talked, and I, you know, I know near and dear to a lot of us on council are the Hero Health Program and the Behavioral Health Unit that are just really innovative, wonderful work you're doing. And we had talked about their reliance on grant funds and whether or not we needed to think about buffering that a little bit, maybe a position a year, just to firm and strengthen them up a little bit. And I don't see that in the budget. I know this is a tough year, but I just wanted to hear from you a little bit of at what point, you know, how confident are we that the grant money is going to continue to be there? And at what point do we really need to bite the bullet? I mean, these are really hard times. I understand we have to be very careful with our budget. We don't know what's going to happen in the next few months, but it seems to me these two programs could actually see more strain on them with what's happening in society right now. So I just want to get a feel for, I know you talked a little bit about maybe Christiana care positions for behavioral health to help out, but I'm just nervous that we are so dependent on soft money for these two really wonderful programs that you have, and at what point we need to start thinking hard about stepping up and getting some funding for some positions.
Vaughn Bond, Chief of Police. Sir, the concerns that you have expressed right now and in the past are the very concerns that we have. We are trying to look at it from a realistic standpoint. Is this the time right now with everything that we have going on for us to push forward with trying to get these as hard positions? Now, we bought a little bit of time with the grants that we have right now, but one of our goals is that we can slowly start to hire individuals and not have to rely on the grant funding. This is not going to be something that's going to be done easily. As you can see, we have a budget of $71 million. And so we understand the fiscal impact that the department or the Division of Police has. And so we have to be very careful. We're looking and we will consider as other positions in the department become vacant, as people retire, the possibility of using some of that funding in order to get some of these positions filled. Because like you said, we don't wanna be in a position where we have to depend on grants. We don't know how long that money will be there, how long it will be available to us. But at this particular time, we have them. I think we're safe for the immediate future. But we are having conversations and talking about how we can move forward with making some of these hires by Newcastle County so that we do not have to live with that over our shoulder.
Just so you know, I'm not comfortable not seeing a position in the budget. I will defer to you for this year, but I doubt I will be ready to do that again next year.
And okay. Well, I hope the next year
to start moving in that direction. These programs are wonderful. You're doing a great job. We need to firm them up, and I, we need to do that.
I agree with you 100%, sir. Thank you.
Are there any other questions regarding the public safety budget? Is this going to conclude the presentation, or are you going to go through more?
We just got started. The colonel, if you would like him to, can go over his tax data, which it starts on page 29.
Yes, please.
Okay. Right. For the sake of time, I know others are coming behind me. I can focus on page 29, where it gives a breakdown. And as you can see, there has been some areas where we've seen some increases and areas that I think we've set some historic lows. I'm talking about historic lows, talking about the number of burglaries in Newcastle County. Last year, we ended up with 694, which was almost 100 or 98 fewer than we had the year before, which we were extremely pleased with. The other area that I look at on here that stands out is officer-initiated incidents. We saw a 2.4% increase from last year and a 6.2% increase from the year prior. And why that's important is I believe the officer-initiated incidents are those incidents that are actually taking place and they are preventing other criminal acts from occurring. So an officer goes out, they see a suspicious vehicle, they make a stop on that vehicle, they find an individual or individuals armed with handguns, they have in more all likelihood prevented a more serious crime from happening. And so a lot of times a telltale sign of how a police department is operating is when you look at their officer initiated, these are the proactive events that officers have to take on. And so I think that that's also important. When we look at the count of stops down there, you can see that there's a 14.9% increase in the number of stops in comparison to last year. Again, proactive policing that goes out there that prevents more serious crime from taking place and also improves the quality of life. The one area that we continue to struggle with, and we just had a conversation about this the other day and devising a plan, is the vehicle thefts. Vehicle thefts are up 14.9% from last year. We are still seeing an increase in them, and we're looking at how we can better communicate with the community. Believe it or not, probably half of those vehicles that are stolen, people have left either their key fobs inside the vehicles or their keys in the vehicle. And in some cases, they have left the cars running and the cars were subsequently stolen. What is difficult about the current trend that we have is in years past, vehicle theft often occurred in apartment complexes. There was a particular area where those that were engaged in the theft of motor vehicles would always target. But what we're seeing now is that it's widespread and it's across the map. And so as we try to come up with a plan of action, it is further complicated because it is such a widespread problem, both here in Newcastle County, as well as the city of Wilmington. And many of these vehicles, some of these vehicles that are being stolen are actually being used to carry out more serious crimes, such as shootings and homicides. If you flip over to page 30, again, it talks about our total annual calls for service. We saw a 1.7% increase. And what I do is I'll skip through this unless anyone has a question. I will go through this and just highlight some of the areas that I think are important. As we can see on page 34, there was a 3.6 decrease in the total criminal cases from this year compared to last. Homicides, we were down one. We had 8 homicides, which is 8 too many, compared to 9 last year and 6 the year before.
Mr. Chairman.
Councilman Street.
Chief, I'm glad you're going through your data
and making comparison last year to this, but quite frankly, that's not impressing me. What is concerning me is we've had shootings darn near every day in the last week. We've had bizarre crimes, somebody shooting their mother, six-year-old shot, teenager shot, and we have no idea what's going to happen when it gets warm and what's going to happen as we start to vacate the stay-at-home orders. And I'm saying all that to say I'm concerned about generally when people have problems working, they'll turn to crime. And I'm saying all that to respectfully suggest that what happened in the last year is really of no moment. It's how we plan to go forward this year. And I think you're going to have to play it 1 month, 2 months at a time. But, and I don't speak for council, and I would respectfully suggest that if you need to make changes in the budget, if you need to increase this or decrease that, that you go to exec and come to council and say what it is you need. How you make a determination now, since we're traveling in the brand new water, I just don't think it could be done until we know exactly what's going on. And I'm gonna repeat, the last week, shootings damn near every day.
Okay, Vaughn Bond, Chief of Police. I understand what your concern is about that, but my understanding was, for the purposes of this meeting, is that I was not going to discuss what happened this weekend, but more so give an overview of, for the metrics part, an overview of comparing this year with last year. But if you want to talk about this weekend, by all means, we can certainly talk about that, because
I don't want to talk about this weekend. I just
want to the streets.
I just want to respectfully suggest that we don't know for certain, but based on some of the outrageous things that have happened over the last couple of weeks, there's good cause to be concerned, and there's also good cause to believe that we may have to make changes.
Yeah, well, I agree. Okay. Vaughn Bond, Chief of Police. I agree with you 100% that we are looking at what changes we have to make and developing plans. This past week has been a very difficult week overall for Newcastle County. We have had some shootings that have taken place that we know are tied to other shootings that have occurred in the city of Wilmington, as well as some of the members involved with having gang affiliation. In terms of us and our approach to the future and what we need to do, that's something that we're going to talk about. I know that I have been in conversation and speaking with my superiors about the possibility of the next academy coming up and some of the things that we want to do in terms of the number of officers that we're hiring. I'm sure that that is going to help us. And as you say, the concern is that as long as this COVID-19 is taking place, that there are going to be some issues and problems down the road for us that we're going to be confronted with. And let me put it this way, and my plan is to work with my command staff and the members of this police department to do the best we can to thwart off an increase in violent crimes and violent incidents. And so, yes, it is at the forefront. The things that I was talking about, again, those were the metrics, I guess, that we were looking at that are in the book. And so I was just simply going over those. But everything that you bring up is a valid point.
I'm glad we agree today, Chief.
Councilor Street, yes. All right, Chief, yeah, proceed with your highlights.
Again, going over to page 38, with the robberies, again, we're seeing a 16.7% decrease in the number of robberies that have taken place. And then the other parts are dealing with the amount of various drugs that have been seized. And just, again, for the sake of time, I think I will bypass that unless there are any additional questions.
Are there any additional questions, members of council, concerning the public safety budget?
As I understand, time is of the essence for public safety, so let's roll.
Okay.
The next division would be crossing guards, and I'm going to ask Dom Gregory to
go. Thank you, Colonel Boss.
Good afternoon. This is Dominic Gregory. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Good afternoon, Council. I am one of the supervisors for the crossing guards. Just an update. We do have now a new supervisor also. Michelle Fox Schneider retired after 45 years, and now we have Colleen Gillen, who is also the supervisor in the office with me. With that said, I'd like to go right to our accomplishments and goals, because I believe Carla Jones is going to go over the other details as far as the money. But if I can start with the accomplishments and goals. If you turn to page 50, you'll see that, you know, at least we continue moving forward in the future to hire at least 4 to 6 times a year crossing guards. It's based on needs because of our older workforce. We do have some guards that retire, and sometimes it's spare at the moment because of our age, because our average age is 70. Also, under the moving forward for the future, we increase officer efficiency by automating all records for personnel and inventory and clothing needs and purchase orders. Also, under accomplishments, we supply all of our guards with protective, visible uniform gear and equipment for each year. And also, with that said, with what we're faced with now, if school continues this year, that decision we made by the governor on the 15th, not so much on this moving forward, but currently we'd also have to be purchasing some masks and protective gear for our guards due to one, because if they're going to be out there, we want to make sure, other than what we normally supply, we are going to have to go and give them masks and also protective gloves. My opinion, hopefully we don't open back up because our workforce is 70 and they're prime targets for this. That's just something to think about for everybody in county council. Also, under other accomplishments, we'll continue to do training for all the crossing guards. All the new guards we hired, they go through mandatory training with senior guards. It's anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks, and we do that every time we hire a new set of guards. All right, the crossing guard unit will achieve the following goals for the upcoming fiscal year of 2021, which will also to once again increase our coverage when needed, to continue to hire as we get old and as we retire. We'll continue to fill the workforce with new applicants. Also, we'll increase our coverage of all posts by using our media, our schools, our newspapers, and our libraries. And a lot of problems for us with our older workforce, it's just getting information to them. We do have an email system in place. However, we're maybe at 50% compliance. We were about 15, but we've been increasing. But to get our whole goal is to get 100% compliance where they use the email system. Also, our goal moving forward is to try to reduce our absentees with our workforce. I will say this, even though we have an older workforce, they do show up. But when you're that age, a day flu for a normal person, maybe 20 or 30, you're off for a day. For our workforce, that could be a whole week. So that's challenges that we face weekly, but we'll continue to work on that. Also, for the upcoming year, we continue to have a dedicated 24-hour hotline system. These are for the guards who don't listen to their emails, and the guards are not up with technology. We have a 24-hour hotline system in place where we put messages and information out to them. And that's also important because the guards don't come to the public safety building every day. They just go to their school or to their post. So we either communicate through emails, and the ones that don't comply with the emails, we have to do it through a hotline or actually manual phone calls. And then also, again, for the upcoming year, we'll continue to order supplies that we need for the crossing guards, their standard uniforms. And also, like I said, moving forward, thinking with this coronavirus in our workforce, we need to make sure they have protective gear as far as masks and gloves. We do issue gloves now, but I think it's stuff like surgical masks, the protective masks they need if they're going to be out there. I think that's something we'll start, if they start back with, we'll do, or if they cancel school for the rest of this year, we'll do that for the beginning of next year. But that's pretty much in a nutshell our accomplishments and our goals. Any questions?
Any questions for members of council concerning the Newcastle County Crossing Guard unit as part of public safety?
Yes, John. This is Council President Karen Hartley-Nagel.
Yes,
quick question. Fine. I was just looking at, we have a position, it says of secretary. Is there someone there now? Or is are someone to be hired?
What happened was that position was vacant. We are in the process of hiring that position. And actually, we just started. But then when the coronavirus hit, they had to dismiss all the training because they had interviews set up and everything. But now when the coronavirus hit, everything's been put on hold. So we actively, there was a test. There's an active test out there. They're going to select from the people from that test. If this virus didn't hit, we'd already have a secretary in place. But since it hit, right now everything's been delayed.
Thank you. It just seems, what is the duties of the secretary? The salary seems very low.
I don't know if it's low, but the secretaries, their duties vary. I mean, a lot of the times they are doing do payroll. When the supervisors don't do payroll, what they do is our post assignments, getting ready for the new school year. They do mailers because, like I said, not everyone conforms to emails with us. They do group emails. They do several secretarial duties, such as, you know, filing and also typing up stuff. But I don't know how to comment on the salary. I thought the salary was pretty standard to what they do.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
And just for the record, the bulk of your cost really come from the school districts, correct?
That's correct. Each district, our budget is from the school districts. Each guard, the Colonial Guards, they have their own different assigned numbers. So whoever works in Colonial, they get paid through the Colonial School District, Christina through the Christina School District, and so on. So we do Colonial, we do Christina, we do Appaquinimic, we do Red Clay, and we do Brandywine, and then we also do Catholics and Privates.
Councilman Smiley.
Yeah, Mr. Gregory, I'm just curious. Is the secretary's pay rate negotiated through the collective bargaining agreement?
Yes, it is.
Thank you. Case closed.
Councilman Bell.
Yes, just real quickly, Mr. Chairman. Our crossing guards aren't on our normal agendas for our public safety committee, and I know that all of council will agree. Our crossing guards do a tremendous job out in the community, and I think day in and day out we witness the danger of being a crossing guard and the outstanding job that they do. You know, there's folks that just totally disregard them, and you want to talk about being in harm's way. Our crossing guards too often trying to protect our children are in harm's way, but they do a tremendous job.
Thank you. Are there any other questions concerning crossing guards? Council President, you have a question? All right, seeing that, thank you for that, Mr. Gregory. And yes, we're prepared at this point to move on to EMS, Emergency Medical Services.
Yes, that's correct. If I could ask Mark Logan to speak on to the accomplishments for EMS, accomplishments and goals.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mark Logan, Acting Chief of the Emergency Medical Services Division. I'm going to go over accomplishments and goals. Accomplishments for fiscal 2020, certainly our biggest is completing our third paramedic training academy. As I spoke recently to the Public Safety Committee, our academy is in the final phases of their training. Half of them are completely free and clear of the Good Fellowship training. The second half, all of them who have taken the national written exam passed this past weekend and are going to be coming out in earnest in our field training as soon as they clear a state test this afternoon. We designed and put into service new style paramedic response vehicles. They have proven to work really well, above expectation. A beauty of them is their cost savings. We're looking at a savings of $30,000 per vehicle and decreased maintenance costs, and much more maneuverable than our previous vehicles. So this is going to be our operational vehicle moving forward. And we have a great vendor that we're dealing with, and we should actually have 7 more of those on order. Worked pretty hard this past year along with the county executive's office to be in some pretty heavy discussions with members of the Joint Finance Committee to get our paramedic reimbursement increased in, through the grant and aid. We've met with each Newcastle County member from the Joint Finance Committee, explained to them our need to grow and our need to have some state financial support in order to meet that growth. And I think our current pandemic situation really highlights the need to have a very robust ALS system. We did have one of our goals was to have another resuscitation academy. Unfortunately, due to COVID-19, we did cancel that, but we are looking to reschedule that as soon as possible. What that does is that uses some proven science, teaches people how to deal with sudden cardiac arrest. And we've shown that through this training, we've increased our numbers of survivors significantly. So as soon as we get back to quote unquote normal, we'll be looking to reschedule that. Looking forward into 2021, we're looking to complete the renovations at paramedic station number 5 in Middletown. Demolition is down there, is to begin soon, followed by the building, the addition building, and the renovations of the interior of our current facility. We'd also like to complete the renovations of station number 6. That's on Glasgow Avenue. We've been working already with Public Works to work on some interior and exterior issues there. We're going to continue to push hard to hire certified paramedics. We've had some significant accomplishments this year in doing so, and we're going to continue to push for to fill vacancies using that model. And certainly, as I said earlier, one of the accomplishments in working with the state in order to increase our reimbursement continues to be a goal for this year. Ultimately, the goal would be to have the paramedic reimbursement in a line item in the state budget. Right now, it's in grant and aid funding controlled by the Joint Finance Committee, and that can be very volatile. Initially, we're reimbursed 60% by the state of Delaware. It's gone as low as 24%, back up to 30% now. We would really like to have it in a line item and have a stable source of funding. That covers our accomplishments and goals. I'll turn it over to Carla.
Okay, on page 64, you'll see the position history for currently the division has 139 authorized positions, and currently there are 13 vacancies in that division as of April 6th. We're not recommending any position changes next year. On page 26, you will actually see the vacancies as of March 9th. However, there have been some changes. The chief of emergency medical services is still vacant. And there are 2 paramedic sergeant vacancies. I believe the lieutenant vacancies were filled. And there are 10 paramedic vacancies for a total of 13 for the division. Moving into the budget, on page 68, you will see the revenue history for the division. And this is basically the money that we received from the state for reimbursement for direct paramedic services. Next year in fiscal year 21, we are expecting just over $6.5 million from the state in reimbursement. And that number, the way that we came up with that number is we're taking 30% of the fiscal year 2020 approved budget. And that's how we come up with the revenue for next year of $6.5 million. Moving along to page 70, I can go through some of the budget changes for fiscal year 21. Merit increases and career developmental promotions, and also the contract for the 1607, for the 1607 union, we have included $1,000 in the budget for next year for that cost. The benefit rate, although the rate is actually going to be decreasing next year, so there is a decrease in the benefit budget for EMS. Cellular telephone service, again, just like police, admin services is now going to transfer that money over to the EMS budget so that they can manage their cellular phone bill. And there was a cross-charge adjustment, and then also $18,000 is being added because we have two new lease agreements with Aetna and Odessa, both fire companies. We've actually started it this year, but it will be budgeted in fiscal year 21. On page 73, you will see the contractual services details for both professional services and service contracts. I just want to highlight that we do pay for the training of the paramedics out of the professional services line, and there is $227,000 budgeted there for that purpose. We also pay for a lot of service contracts for EMS out of the service contract line, including the LifePak 15 cardiac monitoring devices and a few other items as well. Are there any questions on EMS's budget?
Are there any questions from members of council concerning budget for EMS? Councilman Bell.
Unmute myself. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess on the EMS budget overall, and Chief, you probably be in a better position to answer this. Look, it's been a number of years that many of us have served on council, and I think what the administration's done and what the division has done in holding the classes and graduations and trying to maintain staffing is phenomenal. I think it's something that should really be commended. But with that being said, you know, we always end up, by the time the class is their FTO and in service and where the rubber meets the road, we're always back down again in numbers of position. And I know that we've done some areas of overfilling, but in all honesty, I think we've reached a point in time with growth, with over 55 developments, with superhighway systems, where one medic unit in the southern part of Newcastle County has been unacceptable, and I think it's going to become more unacceptable in the future. I can't tell you how much we appreciate the fact that the county executive and the division has brought up a power shift type unit in Odessa Station 4, and the executive's willingness to enter into contract so that that unit can be housed in there for responses. But at some point, and I think the point is long overdue, we've got to work on getting enough paramedics in our advanced life support system to provide more than one unit in southern Newcastle County. And that unit not only covers southern Newcastle County, but it also covers above the canal, fills in for the Glasgow unit, fills in for Medic 2. So it can be as far up as Tybouts Corner, if not further than that. So I know I've pled my case in the past. I'm going to continue pleading it, but you know, we've got to do something better than what we're doing.
Yes, Mark Logan, acting chief. Councilman, I appreciate your comment. I can tell you at this point that the power shift that we've been running down there, also known as Medic 10, Right now, we're running that between 40 and 50% of the time when we have the staff there. We have right now 18 in that academy that are in their final FTO phases. We also have four certified paramedics that are FTOing. So right now we have 22 paramedics who are in that FTO on the cusp, ready to hopefully in the very near future work independently. So the goal is that that Medic 10 unit, as soon as we get people out of the field training, that we can say, yes, we can, we're going to be able to staff that, that power shift will run 100% of the time.
Okay, thank you very much, Chief. If I may, Mr. Chairman.
Councilman Bell.
Yeah, thank you, sir. I appreciate that very much and the information, Chief. Keep up the good work. I think one of the misconceptions sometimes is when you look on a map and you see incidents and you see total number of incidents, what you need to take into consideration is time and distance, weather conditions, traffic conditions. So just because there may not be the density of runs in a large area of the county, it's a matter of time and unit availability it takes to get there on the scene that can make the difference. So I appreciate everything you do, Chief, and everything that our paramedics do.
I saw that
I had Councilman
Carter.
Yeah, I want to echo what Councilman Bell had to say. And I think we need to start that planning for a second unit. I know the auditor is going to talk to us about impact fees. And I think we need to take a hard look, even if it's just for impact fees south of the canal, if we are going to need more facilities, more resources for you to be able to do that, Chief. I know I will be looking hard at that. Maybe it's a few years away, maybe it's 5 years away, but we need to set up an account. We need to look at those fees. We need to make sure that when you're in a position where you've got to get ready and go, that we have an account ready to let you do that. So I appreciate everything you're doing. I'm very excited about the unit being upgraded in Middletown, but I want to start looking at that long range picture maybe sooner than we think, and at least if nothing else, start looking at those impact fees south of the canal and get the money for you to have the facilities you need.
I thank you. Are there any other questions concerning our EMS emergency medical services division from members of council? All right, thank you, Chief Logerman. Let's move on. Carla, did you have anything else you wanted to present?
Well, next we would like to move to the Division of Emergency Communications, starting on page 81. I'm going to ask the chief to speak to page 81.
Yes, good afternoon, Council. Jeff Mueller, Chief of Emergency Communications. Just nod if you can hear me this time.
Good.
Thank you. So some of our accomplishments we discussed last week as well, our emergency telecommunicators course. We had hoped to be running two of those a year, but COVID-19 has derailed that temporarily. We've had good collaboration with some of our VOTEC schools in Newcastle County, reaching out to them and trying to get their students involved in that class as well. Newcastle County 911 Center is now part of the Middletown Police Department Citizens Police Academy. I believe they've had two of them this past fiscal year. We've been involved in both of those, and they actually scheduled two nights dedicated to 911 and emergency communications. We continue to educate the public. We had about 42 outreach programs this past fiscal year, mentored a basketball program, and assisting with youth with those activities. And I'll refer to one of the charts in the back that is unfortunately incorrect, but we did maintain 90% of our calls being answered in 10 seconds or less, not only throughout the fiscal year, but through the calendar year as well. So we're quite proud of that accomplishment. It's nationally recognized standard to be answering our calls in 10 seconds or less, and we've been doing that for quite some time now. some of the achievements we'd like to accomplish in fiscal 21. Again, continue with the course, the ETC class, have the employees from various 911 centers come and operate out of our center. Unfortunately, my PowerPoint didn't show to you last Tuesday, but as I had mentioned there, you know, the first time we have ever really evacuated our 911 center, and we did not need to go to Kent Center and have an operational full fold down, but we should begin practicing that in this next fiscal year coming up. And then work to create a seamless video to 911 integration. We hope to have that in a beta format out to our police officers. If not next week, it'll be the following week to assist them in maintaining distance. They may be able to use some of the video technology to help them with that. And we would push that out to our basic life support community and our advanced life support community once we get it up and running. And that's all I have, unless someone has questions.
Are there any questions concerning the accomplishments and goals of Chief Miller? I'd just like to make a comment. I can tell you that 911 has really become very much improved under your leadership. I can recall not too long ago where constituents are complaining about, you know, slow response to calls or drop calls. That does not happen anymore. And I credit that to your leadership and the reorganization, the career ladders, and all the things that have gone on in the 911 center. It's a credit to the service, and you've done a great job with that.
Well, I appreciate that, Councilman, and our team takes it quite seriously, as you can tell.
Are there any questions? Is Carla going to conduct the rest of the presentation?
Yes, I'm going to take care of the positions and the budget.
Okay.
So on page 83 is the position history. The division has 95 authorized positions. On page 85 are the vacancies as of March 9th. There is a slight update to the vacancies. So there are actually 6 public safety operator 1 vacancies, 1 telecommunicator 1 fire medical vacancy, and 3 telecommunication 1 police vacancies, for a total of 10 vacancies as of March 6th. On page 88 are the budget changes for the division for next year, and it's very similar to all the other divisions. Adjustments for merit steps were the 1607 contract, the benefit adjustment decrease, the enhancement of cellular telephone service to the budget, and the new copier lease and cross charge adjustments. Overall, there's a decrease of 0.33% for the Division of Communications from fiscal year 21, from comparing fiscal year 21 to fiscal year 20. I don't know if Chief Miller wants to go over his performance metrics. He kind of spoke to some of them earlier, but I guess if there are any questions about the graphs starting on page 93, I'm sure Chief Miller would be happy to speak to those.
Yeah, they're fairly consistent with the past years. You see on, I'll go right to
Chief Miller, go ahead.
Page 94. You'll see that the we continue to trend the busy 12 hours of the day or from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. So we staff a power shift during that time, and that's what's really helped us accomplish the 90% in 10 seconds or less. And then I'll just make some adjustments to the graph on page 96. Fiscal 17 should have shown up as 87.23%. Fiscal 18 should have been 87.30%, and then fiscal 19 closed out at 92.36%, and our year of 19 as well, besides just our fiscal. And that's all I have, unless anyone has questions.
Are there any questions concerning the 911 center budget or Chief Miller from members of council?
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for that. thank you for all the important work you do connecting emergency services through the 911 center. All right, Carla, we're going to go to grants to volunteer fire companies.
Yes, if I could direct you to page 100. That page identifies the adjustments for fiscal year 21. So basically, there is $5,000 being added to purchase to provide funding for the for a aerial truck for Delaware City, and then across the board for all of the fire companies, there will be a 3% increase in grants from Newcastle County to the fire service. So next year, for fiscal year 21, the budget will be a 3.07% increase compared to fiscal year 20. Are there any questions about the volunteer fire service grant budget?
Councilman Bell, and then I want to follow up with a comment or question.
Just a quick question. Chief Miller can probably answer this. Odessa's ladder company, is that already included in the current year budget?
Yes, I believe so, sir.
All right. And the only other thing that I'd mention is, you know, once again, you have to compliment not only the service, but the administration's initiative of try and increase the grant and aids with what they can. And, if we're all listening, we have the governor, due to this pandemic, talking about millions and maybe billion dollars and cuts in various nonprofits and grant and aids this next year, possibly due to this pandemic. So I think we need to be aware of the challenges ahead. When we talk about grants to nonprofits, that includes our volunteer fire rescue and EMS.
If I could follow up with that, I'm in continuous contact with two fire companies in my district, Claymont and Brandywine, and I just want to kind of convey the unprecedented stress that they're under with calls, concerns for their own health, lack of PPE, which I think the administration has stepped in to assist with all of our volunteer fire service with the provision of PPE. But this is an unprecedented time, not only for my the fire companies in my district, but throughout Newcastle County, dealing with potentially infected people. And there are going to be major hits to them financially that we all need to be aware of, so that we do not allow this great system we have to fall. And I'm glad to see a 3% increase this year, and I hope we can hold to that through the year. But we're going to need to be, as Councilman Bell said, lobbying for our volunteer fire service regarding the kind of federal money that's going to be coming to the state, make sure that they get their fair share. And I'm going to be very alert to that for my fire companies going forward, and I hope other members of council will too. Are there any other questions, comments? Councilman Smiley.
Yeah, just for clarification for those that may be listening but haven't looked at the budget, the actual total, the $131,430, that's showing as an increase along with the $5,000. The actual budget is $4,581,975.
Thank you for that. Are there any other questions concerning grants to volunteer fire service?
Yes, this is Council President Karen Hartley-Nagel. A quick question. This is also an opportunity for us to look to the past years and compare it to this year and learn something. So I'm asking a question. On page 41 and 42, is the cocaine crack seized on page 41? On page 42, the heroin seized. And then I'm looking at the reported overdose incidents in 2019, which would be page 75. So what I'm asking is that are we seeing an increase in the cocaine and crack overdoses versus the heroin? And to me, if that's so, then that tells me that
some of our programs, addressing the heroin issues and are probably going down. Is that what we're seeing out there? And this would probably be Chief Miller.
It's in the police budget.
I'm sorry. The two that you first referred to are the police departments. I didn't want to.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm looking at the. I'm looking at the police department.
And which the one that would be on page 75, I believe that would be EMS. I just don't want to speak to their charts. That's all.
Okay. Could you tell me? Are you seeing an increase in the amount of overdoses in heroin and crack cocaine, crack and cocaine versus heroin?
I'll defer to EMS Chief.
Chief Weatherman, please.
Right, thank you.
I'm sorry.
Colonel Bob.
Okay, what was the question again was, are we seeing an increase in
Mark Logan, crack? Acting Chief of EMS.
I believe the question is from the council president, are we seeing an increase in the use of crack cocaine overdoses exceeding heroin?
I do not have that number directly in front of me. However, just based on our interactions and our calls for service, I would say that no, heroin is still the number one drug that's being used during overdoses. But we are seeing a resurgence of crack cocaine in some of the communities.
Council President, that suffice?
Yeah, that's what I wanted to see. Is there changes? And it appears that the chief has answered my question. Yet there is a change. But it appears there's not a lessening of the heroin, but just an increasing of the and resurgence of the cocaine.
All right. Thank you. Chief Logan, did you want to? No, I guess you didn't. All right. Did you want to offer any comments?
No, what I can't, Mark Logan, Acting Chief of EMS, what I can add is we are certainly not seeing any market decrease. We're actually seeing an increase in opiate overdoses. And the chart Council President is probably referring to, that's overdoses as a whole. So when someone called 911, that was the chief complaint, was an overdose. So that doesn't denote heroin versus cocaine. What that just denotes is an overdose, period.
Thank you for that. Does that suffice, Council President?
Yeah, but what I was comparing it to was on page 41 and 42. So I was looking at on page 41, it has the cocaine crack seized went from 677 to 1643, which is a huge jump. And then on page 42, you have 702 to 824, but it's still much lower than 27, which was 2440. So I was trying to figure out if we have certain programs that are really working well, which then, you know, those are something we want to put more money into, I would think.
Colonel Bond, I can speak to that just a little bit more.
Please.
The reason that you're seeing the significant increase from 2018 to 2019 in terms of the cocaine and crack seized is the result of a few of the larger scale cocaine investigations that we had. It doesn't necessarily mean that these were actually seizures that were done by patrol officers who were out in patrol and stopped individuals, but these were more long-term criminal investigations into drug organizations that resulted in that high seizure of crack and cocaine as well as powder cocaine.
Okay, thank you.
All right. With that, I'd like to move along, Carla. We're going to do the Office of Emergency Management.
That's correct. And Dave Carpenter is going to start on page 103.
Okay, Mr. Carpenter.
Good afternoon. Glad to be here. Good afternoon, Council. Thank you. If everybody can hear me okay?
Yes.
Good. The Office of Emergency Management accomplishment goals for the fiscal year 2020 continue the format that we've used before, which is the Emergency Operations Center was activated on 5 occasions this past year. We are currently in a active monitoring status for the COVID operation, working remotely. The incident responses, as you can see, on 8 occasions this past year, that's slowed down some with everybody being home now, with no incidents occurring that much of a large nature, which is good. The we continue working on the floating odor calls. We have not seen any over the past couple of months since the last round of those. As you've seen highlighted past in the past papers, we had a slew of floating odor calls throughout Delaware County, Salem County, and Newcastle County, Delaware. And we all there was also one related in Cape May County that we're still tracking as far as the task force goes. The office continues to conduct tabletop exercises throughout the year. However, obviously, due to COVID, as I mentioned last week during the Public Safety Committee meeting, we had several upcoming exercises canceled. We're also reviewing, we also had two CERT classes that were scheduled for May or March and April canceled. We're assessing the one upcoming for May, and we're looking to postpone those till later in the year if we can hold those. We'll also be looking into whether or not we can do some of that virtually in preparation for how the environment's going to be coming out of the plateau of the COVID incident. The office conducts outreach periodically. We do have the Blue Rocks game coming up without the start of the season kicking off, which it was supposed to be last week. That's still in question, and we're not sure on the postponement or conduct of that, but we're continuing to plan and prepare for that. The office also has major goals for 2021. These are continue to be consistent with what we've had in the past, and that's to, again, directly or through coordination, address 100% of the threats or incidents in a timely manner within 1 hour, as we did last year during an incident in Newark. We addressed housing for an elderly population within a condo unit to assist the city of Newark in getting those people some accommodations due to a large electrical fire and outage. We review and revise county facility evacuation plans. We're currently working with Department of Public Works on preparing for the Appaquinimic Library construction and opening with some provisions. And then obviously we also update the County Comprehensive Emergency Management Plan, which is coming up with a couple, obviously, updates. We're looking at possibly getting the contractor, the state's contractor, to do an after-action review on the COVID incident so we can have some lessons learned encompassed into our pandemic plan and our continuity plans. Without that, I'll take any questions if there are any.
Are there any questions, members of council, concerning Office of Emergency Management? Seeing none. All right, thank you, Mr. Carpenter. Carla, did you want to present anything else as part of that?
There are just a few more pages in reference to emergency management, and then we're done. On page 105 is the position history. There are 6 positions in the Office of Emergency Management. On page 107, you can see there aren't any vacancies in that division. On page 109, this graph shows the operating budget match for the Office of Emergency Management only. So for fiscal year 21, the budget, the operating match will be $452,000. On page 114, you will see that there are some other revenue sources that help to support this office, and that includes local and federal funding. And the total amount coming from those areas would be $411,500 in fiscal year 21.
All right.
On page 110, you'll see the budget changes for fiscal year 21. It's very consistent with the other divisions in terms of the merit increases, the employee contract, the benefit rate, and the cross charges. That concludes our presentation. If there are any additional questions, we'd be happy to answer those at this time.
Thank you for that very thorough presentation of our public safety budget for fiscal year 2021. Are there any questions further questions, comments from members of council? Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to compliment Carla Jones on her presentation, and I know you as chair compliment, you know, not only her, but the whole department. But with the department, the size of public safety and the amount of funding and projects and everything that goes on, it takes a very special person to be in that position. So I think Carla does a tremendous job for public safety.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. I thank you very much for the compliment, but I couldn't do it without my colleagues. So, but thank you very much.
Any other comments, questions concerning the public safety budget? Thank you, Ms. Jones. We appreciate you facilitating that for the division.
You're welcome.
We're going to move along. Next under the revised order is the county auditor. County
Just
auditor.
Give me 2 minutes, Councilman.
Okay, thank you. Take a little break, I guess. Just for the record, my legislative assistant, Michelle Gilday, is going to be taking the notes from the audio for the next for the this budget hearing, and we'll have them available for approval. The minutes will be for approval in the next budget hearing.
Mr. Wasserbrock should be in the meeting now.
I've been here.
Duly noted.
I just had to do dog things.
I believe he's here, Councilman.
Okay.
Yes, I'm here. I don't see my face, but I'm here.
You can turn your video on down in the left-hand corner, Bob.
Oh, there. Okay. I'm sorry. Okay.
Okay, Mr. Wasserbeck, you're present here at the webinar, Zoom webinar. Please proceed with your presentation of your 2021 okay. recommended budget.
Thank you. Thank you, Finance Committee, co-chairs Cordier and Smiley, and other distinguished members of County Council for allowing me to present the fiscal year 2021 budget for the County Auditor's Office. I hope everybody's doing well and is staying safe during this difficult time. I know today's a long day of budget hearings, so I'll try to be short. Public safety is a tough act to follow. I want to direct your attention to page 2 of the booklet for the County Auditor's Office, accomplishments and goals. And I'm just going to talk about one item on this list, and Councilman Carter referred to it during the public safety budget hearing. But that's, we did do an audit of development impact fees. And one of the things that we recommended in that report, and by the way, that report has not been issued in final yet. But one of the things we recommended was, in accordance with County Code Section 40.14.230, perform an evaluation of impact fees to determine whether the county is assessing sufficient fees to enable it to fund capital improvements necessary to accommodate new development. And in that particular code section that I referred to, the language in that code section is, all costs in the impact fee calculations are given in current dollars with no assumed inflation rate over time. Necessary cost adjustments will be made as part of the periodic evaluation and update of impact fees. Impact fees will be adjusted for inflation in construction costs as reflected in the Engineering News Record Index and upon approval by Newcastle County Council. However, there has not been any impact fee adjustments since impact fees were implemented in the late 90s, except for fire and rescue, which were adjusted in 2006. This is despite the fact that the construction cost index has almost doubled from the late 90s until now. The county did engage a consultant back in fiscal year 2010, and the consultant did recommend some impact fee increases. However, there were not any increases made at that time, I presume because we were in a recession. So the county auditor's office is not saying that impact fees definitely need to be raised, but we are pointing out this code section and asking the administration to do an evaluation of impact fees, and the executive office and the Office of Finance and Land Use have agreed to do so. Next, if you go to page 9 of the booklet, you'll see the budget, the actuals history, and you'll see that we're recommending a budget increase of $14,272 for fiscal year 2021, which is a 2.98% increase. And if you go to page 10, you can see the composition of that $14,272, which again, on page 10, if you look at the last two items, which are around the middle of the page, you'll see that we're recommending elimination of the part-time funding and the hiring of a full-time associate auditor position, which is an entry-level position. And then if you go up to line 3, you'll see that contractual costs are going down by about $13,000. So we're recommending a decrease in contractual costs, which those costs are some funds we have set aside each year to engage CPAs from local accounting firms to help out in internal audits if need be. So we're recommending that be decreased, and that partially offsets the increase in the salaries and benefits. So again, the total increase is about 14,000, less than 3% increase. And with that, I'll open it up to any questions.
Are there any questions, members of council, concerning the county auditor's fiscal year 2021 budget presentation? I just have a comment. Bob, I think Mr. Wasbeck, I think it was a very important thing to circle back on to look at impact fees. And I think there is a period of dormancy regarding those fees when they weren't changed. I think it could be accounted by the Great Recession and now, however, we're in another crisis. So, but it's something at a certain point in a timely way when this current crisis is eased that we should be looking at impact fees and adjusting them.
The question is, Councilman Carter indicated earlier, is whether we're collecting sufficient impact fees for the capital costs the county needs to incur as a result of new development. And I know you mentioned Southern Newcastle County in particular.
Councilman Carter.
He's muted. Councilman Carter, you're muted.
Yep. I'm sorry. I'm running two Zoom meetings right now. I have my class at the same time as this.
Hey, you're the expert on Zoom.
But I really appreciate you taking a look at the impact fees. I know it's a hard time, but I think we need to tee up and really look at them. I mean, even though I know we're going to see a hit in our really transfer taxes and everything, we have to be very careful about building a whole lot without having the necessary infrastructure in place. And this is the only fair way to pay for it. So I appreciate it. I look forward to seeing and going through in detail the final report. I know we have talked about it. I'd also hope to look at some other uses for maybe some open space funds and stuff like that. I don't know whether that'll work, but clearly the main infrastructure costs, like the paramedics, and if we need a Southern Patrol headquarters down there, I think we will eventually. It makes sense to do it. So I appreciate that, and I look forward to going through it and working with you as soon as we can, once we know what's happening with the budget.
Thank you, Councilman.
Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just real briefly, never been brief in my life, but the impact fees, I think we're on target, and it's good to hear that we're going to take a look at that for the future. But one of the problems that's inherent with impact fees with the emergency services is the fact that growth and the demand for services goes beyond just building a building or adding a piece of equipment. Growth has a demand on personnel. And so I think at some point we've got to take a look at impact fees. I know it's normally been building, but you may not need another fire station. You may not need another paramedic station, but the increased demand that's placed upon our first responders due to the growth, due to the new and added development and population, places a greater demand on the delivery of services from the personnel standpoints. And as we know, the majority, not the majority, every volunteer fire company in the county today is having to use a combination of paid and volunteer professionals, and they manage it. So somehow we've got to see if we can't get that that particular part of it added in the future.
Thank you for your comment, Councilman.
Okay, are there any other questions, comments concerning county auditor budget for fiscal year 2021? All right, thank you, Mr. Wasabat. There are no further questions I can see. Appreciate that, and we'll be conducting further studies of your budget request. So,
thank you very much.
Thank you. We're going to move along with the indulgence of council. We're going to move to our Ethics Commission budget for fiscal year 2021. Who is here to give presentation for the Newcastle County Ethics Commission? Mr. Ralston.
Mr. Ralston.
He's muted. Mr. Ralston, we are taking testimony on the 2021 Ethics Commission budget, if you'd like to start. We're still waiting to hear. I noticed Ms. Sebring has joined us, but she's muted. Good. The council, too, the Ethics Commission.
Hello, council. This is Julie Sebring, Ethics Council, and I can't see whether Vice Chair Ralston is there, but I believe he is.
His name is there, and he's unmuted, but we're not hearing anything. So we're ready to receive a presentation. So are you going to do that, or is Mr. Walsh?
If you'd like me to, Council, I'm more than happy to do so.
All right, we'll proceed. Thank you.
I hope that you, and I would imagine you have in front of you the booklet that was very kindly prepared for us by the Finance Department. And
yes, we have that.
Thank you. Thank you to the Finance Department, everyone involved in that, for helping us with all of this. We would not have the technical capability to do that, so it's much appreciated. For the sake of time and for other reasons, I'm happy to jump to the nuts and bolts of this, because as you know, we're different than your departments, and we only have technically, we have one employee. When I say we, I mean the Ethics Commission, of course. And that one employee is a part-time employee. So even that benefits, the amount of money attributed to that employee under benefits in the budget is technically not money that the commission has in its coffers. It's a number that is placed there by the county administration for legal reasons, for taxes that have to be collected, insurance, things like that. But if you jump to what I believe is page 11, and Vice Chair Ralston, if you can hear me, if you want to jump in at any time, please feel free, assuming council allows that. But if it is page 11, and I think it is, you'll see that the commission determined that it would not it's basically asking for the same budget that it asked for last year. There is a slight increase. Those increases are increases that have been placed on certain lines of the budget that are there because the county requires those increases, such as cross charges. Again, that benefits figure that gets added to the part-time employee salary. The salary itself has not gone up. I think it's primarily the bulk of the small percentage increase is in that benefits portion, which again, the commission, that's not money to the commission to use. So at the risk of being ridiculously brief, I would just ask if anyone has any questions about that. But that is the commission's request for FY21.
All right. Are there any questions or comments? It's very unfortunate Mr. Ralston is not able to offer testimony, but are there any questions or comments on the FY2021 budget request of the County Ethics Commission? Did you want to talk about?
Can you see me?
Smiley, yes.
Yes. Ms. Sebring, I mean, the ethics budget has always been the most difficult one because so much of it is confidential. And
right.
We can't really get into what is spent where, which has always given me some angst. But I looking at the February report that was filed, it shows that there's still 7 of the 20 complaints filed in 2015 outstanding, and 2 of the 15 complaints filed in 2017 outstanding. Is there any specific thing you can tell us as to why these are still outstanding? As someone who's been a subject of complaints, I mean, it's got to be tough on people at being out there for 5 years and 3 years waiting on something to get resolved.
Sure. And I would, if I may, like to ask you what report you're referring to, the February?
I am referring to the 2019 annual report.
Oh, the annual report. Got it. Okay, great. I'm happy to see that you are reading through that report because we do put that together carefully. There are, from 2017, and as you all, well, probably all know by now, the 2015, 2016, 2017 were hopefully extremely unusual years, which will not be repeated for the Ethics Commission or the county, in as much as we received 35 complaints in those 3 years, which is more complaints than the commission ever received in 20 plus years, all put together. Luckily, it has not cost us 20 times what the commission gets paid or gets funded for normal years, whatever normal might be. But as we've been slowly but surely getting through that huge amount of complaints, we do still have some that are continue to be pending. Let's see, hold on just a second, please, if I may. 2015, there are 7 still pending from 2016, there are 0 pending from those have all been resolved. 2017, out of 8, there are still 2 pending. Did you want some specifics, Councilman Smiley?
I mean, is it because of a lack of cooperation or exactly what's going on? I mean, I'm trying to get a handle on why it's taking so long.
Right. Initially, there was a couple of years that actually went by with, not that nothing was happening, but that certain matters that were filed in those 3 years were not able to be resolved by the Ethics Commission because of matters that were involved at other levels, like the state level and the federal levels. And it's been the commission's
tradition, for the most part, that if they are asked to back off of a situation and stay it by other agencies for good cause shown, they have done that. And so that took place with many of these, with several of these matters. Just fairly recently, those stays were lifted. And so we've been moving forward on them, but it's almost as if for the Ethics Commission's hearing purposes, to have hearings in these, that they're brand new. And so we've been moving forward on them. There has been a cooperation problem, absolutely. And some of that is what I would call perhaps just normal adversarial situations. Other stumbling blocks I would put in the category of unusual. And but we meaning the commission, we have a path forward on that, and we are very hopeful that many of these complaints that occurred, that were filed in the 2015, 2016, 2017, even 2018 period, that they will be resolved within the calendar year. But, and this is the scary unknown, the scary caveat, is that there is a perhaps semi-threat of litigation. And if litigation is involved, and it's not simply an administrative hearing process, then it's really a big question mark as to what the cost might be. We're doing everything we can to make sure that does not happen. We do not believe, let me put it this way, the only reason the commission would go forward in a litigation posture is if the commission felt that it was absolutely necessary to protect the interests of the county and the county citizens to go to that kind of expense. For the most part, we want to do whatever we can to not have that happen. Things are in movement and in flux, and in the next several months will probably tell us a lot more.
Okay, thank you for the explanation, and I'm going to hope that we don't get into this again, because my own opinion is a lot of that was due to the election, and now we're into another election cycle. So let's hope the children have grown up.
Yes, I would strongly second those words.
Thank you.
I know that Mr. Ralston connected in it, but his mic is still muted. So.
He's done.
Any other questions for members of council concerning the Ethics Commission budget request for fiscal year 2021?
If I may, Councilman Cartier, if there aren't other questions, there were a couple other matters I wanted to address.
Go right ahead.
Are they relative to the budget?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, just to highlight, and thank you for taking the time to look at all of this and looking at our annual report, but you're probably, if you haven't already, you're probably involved in, we are in what we call SFI season. So you may have already filed yours, and hopefully if you've filed one in past years, you were able to take advantage of the new autofill feature, which we worked on and of course paid for with county money. So hopefully that's doing well, and as far as I know, it is. I think that's a nice improvement. And then we're also, after, quote, SFI season, unquote, is over, we're going to roll out, we've developed a website for the gift log that will help to centralize the gift log process. So we're going to roll that out as well, so that anyone who is a county official or county employee wants to register a gift on the log, they can do this in the centralized one. That also gives the citizens of Newcastle County a centralized place to go for any information about gifts. We thought that would be important to try to get that out during this current campaign season, and for other reasons too.
And also that the Ethics Code Review Committee, which is a subcommittee of the commission, has been meeting fairly regularly, almost every month, for about a year now. And we are deep into a lot of work with the Ethics Code Review and Revision. And that's been very work intensive. And I think we're going to be able to come out with a good product at the end when we're finished doing all of that, which naturally will be for you to review and discuss and decide how you may want to change the ethics code. So there's a lot of work above and beyond what our maybe our quote normal work would be. And also we've been doing training, and we're working on trying to figure out a way to do training during the COVID season, so that we don't fall back on that either. Those are just some highlights, I guess, of things that the county pays for. And of course, we're always, the commission is very, very, very grateful for the support that the council has consistently been giving them. Clearly, obviously, we would not be able to do any of our work without your support. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Ms. Sebring. Are there any questions, comments regarding the Ethics Commission budget from council for year 2021? All right, seeing none, thank you for that, Ms. Sebring.
And thank you.
Stay safe out there.
Thank you very much.
We're going to move along. The final presentation of this budget hearing, our land use department. I see Rich Hall's teed up. The general manager, would you like to begin?
Am I shaking? He fell asleep.
Hello, Richard. Hello. There you go.
Okay, I'm in now. Thank you.
You're there,
everyone. I know
it's glad to have you here, Richard. Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you as well. I know it's been a long hearing. I do have a PowerPoint I'll go through rather quickly. Highlight a few points, and then end up with some of the key pages from the budget books that you all have. So I'm going to try to share my screen here. If that doesn't work, I know that Tara has the actual presentation as well. So we'll do it one way or the other. So let me share my screen. You all see it now?
Not unless it's Councilman Bill.
No. Oh, all right. Well, that might be better, actually, than what I have, perhaps.
Work for me.
So I'm going to try this again to share my screen. There we go.
It's going there.
Okay.
There we go.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Try the okay, we've landed on the moon now. Thank you. Sorry. Okay. So just like I said, what I'm going to do here is go over a couple introductory slides and then get into some of the key pages in the budget. So this is just showing you how we approach our task here in Department of Land Use through progressive initiatives, partnerships, outreach, and operational efficiency. And I think, as you know, we're an agency that's 80% self-funded. In a nutshell, our mission is to build stronger, healthier, sustainable communities through community engagement. We do a lot of outreach, a lot of engagement, whether it's for some of the planning activities. activities we're undergoing, other engagement with the citizenry and business community in the county. But also, we have a lot of customers, a lot of people come in, citizens, developers, come in to the department physically, and now more than ever, of course, virtually. And so we have a lot of different ways of engaging our customers, telephone, online, and people actually coming in. We did have a briefing with the Land Use Committee last week on how we're responding to the virus and some of the details of how we're changing up some of our engagement and some of our field inspections and that type of thing. You can see in this chart, and we've shown analogous charts in previous years, how we have different ways of interacting with our customers. One of the things I want to highlight, because this is going to be significant and the next coming up in the next 2 years, is under state requirements, the county has to update its countywide comprehensive plan every 10 years. So ours is due in 2022. Last time it was updated in 2012. And this is the countywide comprehensive plan. As you know, we're working on sub-area plans, so we sort of have a start in a way. We have, yes.
The audio is coming in and out.
So. You're backing away from your mic, I think.
I'll get closer, perhaps.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, sorry. Sorry, you have to look at a bigger image of me, but that's just the, I guess, you know.
Max headroom.
Of making this thing work. So we have several legislative initiatives. Some are have been completed through our Green NCC and other legislative initiatives. And we have some that's been adopted that you're all familiar with, and then we have some that's in play here. And this will be coming this spring and summer. And we've had some workshops on these initiatives, and look forward to working with council and other stakeholders to move forward on that. I wanted to mention briefly Jobs Now effort. That's our fast track effort for. Employment-producing projects, and so I'm showing 2019 here. These projects are probably familiar to you, as well as 2020, because they're in various stages of completion. But you'll see in a little bit when we get to our charts that some of these larger commercial buildings are a big part of our increase in revenue. Current fiscal year, and we're projecting some of that in the next fiscal year. But I'll show you that briefly in just a minute. As you know, we're part of the team within the administration, as well with council, on the vacant strategies effort. And just a couple of highlights from that. We're one of the key players in that. We have a 40% reduction in vacant property since 2017. We covered $2.5 million in unpaid property and school tax. Through code enforcement, and 52 properties have been sold either through share sale or repurposing them since 2017. So I know we work with council and others to get some legislation passed that help this and some of our other code enforcement efforts, and you're really seeing some of that pay off. Some of it relates to some of the details in this slide, which I'm not going to spend a lot of time on. But these are some of the highlights from code enforcement, whether it's enhanced ticketing that we've talked about a number of times in council over the last 3 years, and seeing a 53% increase in the revenues from enhanced ticketing. Obviously, the goal of ticketing is not to raise revenues, but it's to bring folks into compliance. But that's part of the overall picture. We talked about monitions and the cost recovery there, the revenue recovery there as well, and vacant registration. We've had the vacants go down from over 1,300 to just over 800 in the last few years, properties. And then revenue for code enforcement has gone up significantly, 57% increase. You will see soon that we are requesting one new code enforcement officer this year. The other thing I want to highlight is, as I mentioned before, we do a lot of public outreach in a lot of different ways. Obviously, more and more, you just can't rely on the traditional public hearings. Obviously, you have to have a whole menu of different approaches, and we're constantly trying different things to reach everyone. Some folks are consistently harder to reach than others, but we continue to try, whether it's for development proposals or if it's for planning efforts, what have you. We're always trying different means to reach out to people, including social media and always adding things to our website. So, coming now to our recommended actions, mentioned that we're looking to ask for an additional code enforcement officer. Some operational improvements. While this has to do with being better able to operate efficiently remotely online, and as well as for customers to use our online services better, and also being more efficient in the field using technology to make our field staff more efficient as they go out and do their inspections and code enforcement efforts out in the field. And then we're also looking for some customer convenience software for scheduling. And then credit card fees. Simply put, the credit card fee issue is a little bit of the cost of doing business. The more permits, the more development reviews we're doing, the more fees there are, and then people are often using credit cards to pay for that. So that's why our credit card fees go up. Now I'm just going to hit some of the highlights from the budget book, and I got the page numbers from the budget book on here. So this is just the general outline of the department. This is in page 2, breaking the Lanes Department to its major sections. But just for background, position history, as you can see, over the last several years, were relatively flat, going back to 16, coming up to 2021. I will say that last fiscal year, we did take on the county's GIS unit because we're one of the bigger users of them. So GIS is within our department now, and that was 5 positions that came into the department. They still service the same service they did before, since they're within our department. Vacancies, currently we have 8 vacancies. The table says 7, but we had one of our engineers leave just a couple weeks ago, so they were not in.
Must have been the sound engineer.
Yeah, must have been. Is that much better now, Bill?
Yeah.
No?
Yeah, you need to stay close.
Okay, sorry, it's not working so well. So anyway, we have 8 vacancies, even though the table says 7. So 8 total vacancies within the department. The revenue history, you can see that going up over the last several years. For this year, obviously, we've got about a quarter left in the current fiscal year, but we're estimating that we'll see quite a spike, again, as you can see in our revenue history. And that's due to some of the larger commercial projects that I'm sure you all are familiar with. And so to some degree, we expect that in the next fiscal year. Exactly how much, we don't know for sure. We are aware of several projects that are likely to be in the development review pipeline in the next fiscal year. So this probably won't continue forever, obviously, but you do see a significant spike in our estimated revenues for the current fiscal year. The budget versus actuals within the department. Bottom line is we're looking for a 3.9%, just under 4% increase in revenues. That's going for mainly personnel, the position, as well as the increase in salaries and benefits. So the primary 3.9% increase in the budget there. That's it. So I know I'm kind of fast, but we're happy to address your questions. Anything else in the book that you want to ask, we can certainly refer back to the book or anything else that you may have.
All right. Thank you, Richard. Mr. Hall, I'd like to have you, I can't see all the members of council right now. Let's see. Because we're looking at your presentation. Are there any questions, comments from members of council concerning the land use fiscal year 2021?
That's there we go.
Fiscal year 2021 budget request. Any comments, questions? Councilman Sheldon.
Yes, I didn't either. I didn't get the 2020 new jobs project on here. I got the 2019. I do not also in my presentation have the code enforcement part of it that Rich Hall talked about. Could that be emailed to us?
Yeah, that's
absolutely.
Good.
Sure.
That's a good point. Please do that.
I mean, there were actually good, some good numbers that we'd like to brag. They should have been in here. They really should have.
We'll send them.
Are there any other? Councilman Hollins.
You're muted.
I guess it helps to unmute, huh?
Yep. You can leave the picture off, but we need the sale.
Thanks, George. Rich, I noticed that at our last land use committee meeting, and I thought it was around 5 million square feet of distribution center space. And looking at what you just presented, it looks more like it's 7 million square feet of distribution space or distribution centers. And I know last year, council adopted, I think it was called the development zones. And I thought one of the ideas behind the development zone was to try to increase not only opportunities for development, but also higher end paying jobs. And even though I don't frown upon these distribution centers, but it just seems to me that it's just a great proliferation of them. Obviously, warehouses don't pay a lot of money. And I don't know how that really comports with what the goal was. And if, in fact, I guess the question is, have you, your department actually worked on one of these zones? Or have you identified where these zones are going to go? Because if we continue down this path, Newcastle County is just going to look like a giant warehouse.
Yes. Councilman Hollins, we've had some conversation about that internally. I think it came up a little bit at the land use, last land use committee meeting, sort of a little bit of a side conversation. But yes, not all these projects you're seeing are like an Insight, for example, where you have a lot of high paying jobs. They're mostly going in the HI zone. The zone you're referring to, I think, is the economic empowerment zones we passed in 2016. And those operate, those are enabled in the UDC. They operate a bit like a rezoning. I don't disagree with you that, these larger distribution centers, they certainly employ people. They pay taxes. They pay permit fees. Are they top of the line jobs? No. So how we address that from a sort of policy perspective, we've kicked around a few thoughts, but, I think that is something to think about going forward. But it's, it's what's coming. It's what people want to build right now. And so that's what we're seeing. Again, they're mostly going into the HI zones. But it's a very good question.
All right, thank you, Rich. I just had some concern about that. It seemed like we're just trending that way. And even with the personal storage units, I have like several of those in my district, and they'll continue to come, and you still get questions about those. But now it seems that Amazon, with whatever they're doing, getting $4.5 million from the state, and now they're every available space they can get is going to become a distribution center.
Yes, it's certainly, if you look around, much of the country, especially in the Mid-Atlantic area, they're building a lot of these facilities quite extensively.
Councilman Carter. Dave, Councilman Carter. You're up.
You're muted.
You're muted.
Oh, maybe he's
sorry about that. You know, just building on what Councilman Hollins had to say, are we really beginning to actively look at, I mean, we're seeing a total restructuring of our economy in terms of, you know, what retail once was, what it's going to be. I think it was well on this transition to this mail order distribution. And I think after another couple of months of COVID-19, it will expedite it, have major, major impacts for how we're doing planning and how we're doing land use. And I know we're looking at hoping to see town centers in Southern Newcastle County. You know, do we have a feel what the reality of this actually is right now? You know, we've talked a lot about concentrating jobs around, you know, places of employment around where you live. I think many people will continue to telecommunicate on Zoom and other stuff permanently after this. I'm real concerned. I mean, it's going to impact Southern Newcastle County very significantly. It's going to have an economic impact, but we're seeing a total restructuring that started before COVID-19 that is going to be driven home by COVID-19. And I'm just trying to figure out, you know, besides just talking about it, what are we looking for? What's the data telling us? Where's the evidence pointing? Because it's really real.
Yeah, it's something that certainly has been talked about. There's not a lot of data because you're trying to project how the economy, the building industry, and people, customers, leasers may do differently. You know, I think we're going to look, obviously, and we have, like you said, before COVID-19, at a certainly softer and softer real estate market, real estate, especially for big box. That's been going on for at least 2 years now in a noted way. What's that going to mean for future real estate demands, especially given what we already have built? It's certainly something that we need to look at and address. It might speak more to having even more focus on mixed-use projects, because the demand for the larger big box site project won't be the same. People still are going to want that experience of the mix that we also saw going on in the last several years of shopping as entertainment, as placemaking, as activity centers. So how that manifests itself on the landscape, I think, remains to be seen, especially in a suburban jurisdiction like Newcastle County. So those are big questions. You know, I think a lot of people have a lot of ideas, but certainly something I think needs to be, among many other things, but needs to be a focus in the 2022 plan.
I mean, do we have a strategy of how to look at it? I mean, we are already developing strategies knowing that higher education will never be the same again after COVID-19. Mm-hmm. And I think we, rather than saying we're waiting for the data, I think we need a strategy of how we're going to look at this, because it's going to restructure a lot about land use and about our development patterns and about our economic basis and other stuff. I don't think there's any going back.
Yeah, I think there will be a bit of a new normal. I think the strategy is really the comprehensive plan. Certainly, that'll be a part of the plan. But, you know, I look forward to trying to address it there. I don't have a specific report that would answer your questions per se. I've seen folks start to write about it as an issue, but sort of, you know, I've not seen many specifics yet on exactly what this means. There's a lot of theories, and I think many people are going to be wrestling with this in the coming couple of years.
Are there any other comments, questions for Mr. Hall concerning the land use budget? I just had a couple of points. Was a really great slide looking at how code enforcement's recovering costs, because I know that the cost of that division is extremely high, has been for a long time, and it was really great to see, you know, we're really recovering. The costs are out in the field. No, we don't want to use it as a, you know, way to fund the budget, but it's, you know, it's a cost burden to the government, and, you know, property owners should be, you know, taking, we should get the resources back that we've used to abate, mitigate, you know, hearings, all these kind of things we have to do with problem owners. So I really applaud that effort, and I hope we do more of it as we go forward. The other thing going to this whole idea of logistics, logistics centers as the future economic development of the county, I think it's a reality. It's here. And one of the things I just want to alert everybody on council to, you know, there is a submission for the redevelopment of the Edgemoor Chemours site for a port expansion in Edgemoor. Now it seems that that's morphing where it'll be container shipments going by truck, where before it was a lot of talk about moving containers by rail. Predominantly now it's going to be by truck. So one of the other things that gives me pause is the volume of truck traffic and how it's going to increase through the county with all the proliferation of these logistics centers. And we have a port expansion, the impacts on communities, the impacts to air quality. I mean, I think the county has to really step it up on that stuff, because I know that there is a potential for electric trucks that is developing and is going to be a practical technology. If it's not now, it will be shortly. And I think we should condition our center approvals based on how much EV use they're gonna have there rather than diesel vehicles. So, you know, truck traffic is a big concern of my constituents at the new port. Seems like we've got a whole different program than what they initially advertised. And I just want to alert everybody to that. But unfortunately or fortunately, whatever way you look at it, I think that is going to be the predominant economic development modality, redevelopment modality, predominating going forward. And of course, reinforced by this pandemic crisis that we're in, where people are really turning much, much more to, you know, mailing in things and ordering online even more. It's a trend before, now it's even more intense. So I think these are things we've got to, as a council and the department, have got to really very much focus on. Are there any other comments, questions from members of council? All right. With that, I'd like to thank Mr. Hall for presenting that, and we appreciate your testimony and any additional materials that requested by Councilman Sheldon. I think we would all appreciate that being emailed to us as well. All right. With that, concludes our agenda, revised agenda for today, we're going to move on to public comment. Tara, is there any public comment? Anybody waiting to give us public comment?
I do not see any.
Okay. Do I have a motion?
Motion to adjourn.
Go a second.
Second.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay. See, we got the April 20th budget hearing. Virtual Zoom webinar meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
See you all next Monday, 2:00.
Thank you very much, members.